Blog Talk Radio. Do you know where your politicians are? That's the question. It's July the 5th, and this is a special edition of The Last Word with Michael Lawson. Well, we know where some politicians are. We're going to have one of them, two of them, maybe three, on the show today. We're going to have some politicians on the show today that are out for your interests and not out for their own self-interests, like someone in the 8th District, not mentioning any names, Larry Kissel. I see in the front page, well, I shouldn't say the front page of the local and state section, Section B of the Charlotte Observer. North Carolina Black Leadership Caucus not happy with Kissel. And they ain't the only ones. But see, you know, we have so much to talk about. And see, I was supposed to be gone, but I had to stay. Well, partly because my sciatica is killing me. I have been walking around with a limp, with a cane. It is killing me. I can hardly walk, hardly sleep, taking medicine. That, I mean, I can't even pronounce the medicine I'm taking. But getting back to Democrats, we had a trifecta just a little while ago up in Raleigh. What the frack is going on with these elected officials, Democrats, in Raleigh? They overrode the governor's veto three times. Give me a fracking break, as they say in Battlestar Galactica. What the frack? I mean, we had five conservative Democrats want to regress us back to the 19th century, not even the 20th century, and vetoed the governor's Racial Justice Act. I mean, yes, North Carolina can now be classified in the same boat as South Carolina, Georgia, Texas, Mississippi, and others under the name of ignorance and stupidity. thanks to a handful of Democrat blue dogs. Although they'll say they're not blue dogs. No, they're just dogs. And one other thing, Becky Carney, who I love sincerely, made a mistake. And, from this person's point of view, I accept her mistake. It just so happened that it was a decisive vote. Becky made a mistake. Becky has done loyally. She has been loyal to this party and to members of her constituency. And everybody has to make a mistake once in a while. I know no other mistakes Becky Carney has ever made. So I will give her a bye. But those other two Democrats in Mecklenburg County, they have to pay the piper. Now, we're going to be going into this, and we're going to have some Democrats on the line today, some elected officials on the line today. And let's see who we have right now on the line. Hello there. Who's this?
Marshall, Mike.
Marshall Harvey.
Yes, I'm here. Listen, I'm gonna have to give you about 30 minutes today because I got another appointment. Just happened this morning.
Well, what do you have
to
say?
But I agree with you. I agree with you in part.
Only in part?
I mean the representative from Mecklenburg County that made the mistake,
yes,
with her vote. That's a possibility.
Yes.
Because with all the chaos down here at the legislature in the last year or so with those Republican people, it's possible to make a mistake.
Well, you know, listen. You only got two keys in front of you.
Right.
You know, you only got two keys in front of you. This is not a keyboard. But I am giving Becky Carney the benefit of the doubt because it's Becky Carney. Anybody else who has said this, I would call them a liar and swear they did not make a mistake. But I am not doing that with Becky Carney because I know Becky, and she did make a mistake. And I accept that. And I feel so sorry for her.
And I say that is possible. And my rationale was that the confusion, if you haven't been to the legislature this year or and when they're in action and everybody's on the floor, there's so much confusion down there. Even the wisest person can even make a mistake.
Mm-hmm. Well,
the speaker at one point mispronounced one of his colleagues' name, and you know these guys probably huddled up all the time talking. You know, so it's possible, Mike. You know,
maybe he didn't like him, and that was a way to get back at him.
Yeah. But like you talk about now, the representative from Wake County, Darren, he changed his vote. Now, his rationale for changing his votes and voting to override the governor's veto of the budget was that in his district there are a lot of people that possibly would lose their jobs. Now,
that's a problem.
If the budget had not passed, then we would be using the budget that's currently in place. And under
correct.
That budget, there was no jobs being cut. So his rationale doesn't fly with me. So, that I found that to be really, really a little suspect.
Well, we're going to have a person on in just a minute who is going to explain all that to us.
Please explain.
I want to know, what about the Racial Justice Act? We're going back to the 1950s now?
Well, you know, when you cannot use, everybody used statistics to prove points now.
Oh, yeah,
under the new bill that has just been made law again, it took all of the meat and potatoes out of the old bill that actually gave individuals. And we know that there is a possibility that many of the folks who are now sitting on death row, who are minority folks, they may have been sentenced by a very prejudiced jury.
You think?
Who may have been made up of none of their peers. So, you know, to send a person to death row and to possibly carry out and kill them and not give them a chance to get off. And we've seen people who have been accused and been sentenced to death row, and they were innocent. They were innocent. So now you're saying, the state is saying, we don't care if you're innocent. The courts have spoken, so now we're going to get you out of the way regardless. We're not going to give you a chance to prove that you didn't do it.
Yeah, that was Tom Goosby, Republican from Wilmington. He said that on the floor.
Yeah.
And, but what's Reverend Barbara going to do about this from the NAACP, the president?
I think Reverend Barbara is going to play hard as usual to get that bill repealed. That's one. You talking about repealing something? That's one that should be. I think the NAACP is gearing up for a long fight with the legislature. You know, they were in such a hurry to get out of town. I guess some of them didn't even pay their hotel bill. You know, and the kind of shenanigans that this legislature did. You having a session at 12 midnight on a Tuesday night, and people have gone home or in the bed everywhere, all over the city of Raleigh, and you vote on issues that are critical to the survival of the state of North Carolina.
Right. Well, you're absolutely correct. And matter of fact, I'm going to bring in right now our leader from House District 50, Mr. Bill Faison.
Hey, Michael, how are you doing today?
How are you, sir?
I'm doing great, buddy. How are you doing today?
Fine, Bill. How are you doing?
I want you, Bill, to explain to everybody out here what actually happened the night of the trifecta.
All right. Which subject would you like me to start with first, Michael?
You start with the first one that comes to your mind.
Well, let's start with the one that I think.
We're going to go through each one of them.
Well, let's start with the one that I think affects so many so much of the heart of many of your listeners is the Racial Justice Act. And one of the arguments I made on the floor against them changing the Racial Justice Act was basically this. 20.5% of our population is African American. We know discrimination has existed without question. We also know that discrimination does exist without question. And the significance of the Racial Justice Act, if you look and understand the technicality of it, as much as anything else, was to say to over 20% of our state's population, we recognize and acknowledge that discrimination exists and that efforts need to be made at a state level to respond appropriately to existing discrimination and past discrimination, and that at least in something as important as the death sentence, we are going to go beyond all else to give everyone affected an opportunity to show that racial discrimination played a part in the imposition of the death penalty. And we're going to give them every tool they could possibly use. And we're going to leave it within the judge's discretion what to consider, but we're going to leave all tools open. And as you know, Judge Weeks, using those tools about 3 weeks ago, found in a particular case that racial discrimination had played a part in the imposition of the death penalty. And pursuant to that statute, the Racial Justice Act, had changed the sentence of that man from death to life imprisonment without the possibility of parole. And what the Republicans have now done, in my view, is have said to the African American community, we don't think you should have the same fair treatment and have available to you the same improve resources that are standard in every aspect of day-to-day business. General Motors uses statistics to figure out how to plan their markets. Google uses statistics to figure out where they're going to go and how they're going to grow. Banks use statistics in deciding whether to open a new branch. Statistics are a normal and ordinary course and part of business in America. And to say that statistics are available everywhere in the world, in every aspect of our life, except to be able to show something as important as critical as to whether or not there's been racial discrimination in the imposition of the death penalty, is an absurd position. And the Republicans are awful for doing it, and the community needs to remember that and to put Democrats back in office so that we can go back and correct this travesty.
Well, I think it could not be said much better than what you just said, Bill. But what my question is, what the frack with these five Democrats that voted with the Republicans?
Well, as I'm sure you know, at least some of those people, well, let's sort of break it down, I guess, in small parts. First of all, fracking is a problem on a number of fronts. It's a problem on the environmental front. It doesn't provide any jobs in this state. There aren't going to be any significant uses or benefits from having fracking in North Carolina for 10 years. And on top of that, what they have in mind is taking away people's personal property rights and allowing a private company to literally condemn them.
I might have led you down the wrong way with the use of frack. I was talking about the five Democrats that voted against the Racial Justice Act.
Sorry.
When I said,
well,
what the frack?
the Democrats who did that, I had it all written down at one point, but I don't remember on the top of my head. Who were the five again, Mike?
Let's see if I have that here. I thought I had them. Had it here.
Should be Brisson. But, should be Brisson and Hill.
Yeah. Brisson.
McLawhorn. Who are the other two?
Yeah. It was.
So Brisson, Hill, McLawhorn, and who?
That's the budget. So that wasn't Brand. That wasn't Jackson, was it?
No, Jackson wouldn't have voted.
Oh no, it's Brisson.
Jackson voted
Bill Owens, Bill Owens, and Spear.
And Spear. Okay. Well, Owens, Spear, and Hill are leaving. They're not coming back. The North Carolina Academy of Justice did their best to defeat Brisson, got within a few hundred votes, but Brisson got through anyway. And McLawhorn's district attorney was giving her a fit. McLawhorn is in a lot of the district attorneys have given folks a fit over the Racial Justice Act. They see their job is to try to get people put to death, and they want to put people to death, and they're upset with anybody who's interfering with the process.
Yeah, it was Brisson
McLawhorn.
Crawford. No, not McLawhorn. It's Brisson, Crawford, Hill, Owens, and Spear.
Not McLawhorn.
No.
Okay. Well, Crawford, Owens, and Hill, and Spear are not coming back. Crawford got defeated in a primary. Hill, Spear, and Owens elected not to come back. And Brisson, the Justice Academy, did their best to defeat him but couldn't get it done. Mm-hmm. So I just think their heads are in the wrong place. Now, you'd have to acknowledge that there are district attorneys out there who are giving legislators, Democratic legislators, a fit because the district attorneys see as part of their job trying to get people put to death, and that's what they want to go forward and do. To her credit, if McLawhorn didn't vote with them, to her credit, McLawhorn held up for us because her district attorney was all over her case trying to get her to vote against the Racial Justice Act.
Isn't the position of the district attorney to look for truth and justice?
Well, I thought
not
so.
Just
my,
to kill somebody?
Right. Well, yeah. Bill just opened my eyes. I thought that they were, this attorney position was that we're going to get the truth, not just
right.
Kill people wholesale. You know, that's back into the 18th and 19th century when you just kill people because you thought they needed to die. And that's a horrible situation to be in. I don't know.
Bill?
Representation, can I ask you, are these people lawyers? What are their backgrounds?
No, there's not a lawyer in the crowd. Owens is a developer. Hill is a grocer. Spear was a wildlife officer turned clerk of court. Crawford is a businessman developer.
Okay.
I believe.
And Brisson is a big farmer.
Big farmer.
That's something that's really sad to say from North Carolina. I think with this during this period, we have taken a giant step backward. Our education system now, I think we're just below Mississippi.
49th.
49th. Okay.
49th.
So we're one above Mississippi.
We were 49th when they passed the budget originally. Some other states passed budgets that also reduced educational spending. I think the last number I saw put us somewhere around between 45 and 46 nationally in per pupil spending.
Okay, so we went up a notch, huh? A couple of notches.
Well, what happened is other people came down below us.
Right, right, right.
We were down at 49th at one point.
Right.
We've gotten better, not because we were spending more, but because other people were spending less.
Yeah.
And there is some increase in educational spending as a result of the adjustments to the budget, but I don't know where that leaves us relative to other folks in the country.
So, Bill, let's go to what the frack, about the fracking.
Okay. Well, I tell you, as Democrats, that was a very, very big deal. Not only does fracking do bad things to the environment, but what the Republicans have in mind are taking away people's individual property rights in favor of corporations. I ran three amendments on that bill, two intended to protect trespass rights, one to protect folks from a concept called pooling. The Republicans defeated all of them, two of them by five votes. One of them, the vote was a tie, and the amendment failed for not having a majority, and it only got to be a tie because the Speaker, who rarely votes, voted to make it a tie. Now, that was an important bill for Democrats to win. The governor vetoed it. We had the votes to sustain that veto, and one of the ways that you get leverage with the Republicans on issues that matter to you is to be able to hold the governor's veto. So not being able to hold the governor's veto on that issue was absolutely huge. It was not only huge on protecting our environment, it was not only huge in protecting individual property rights, but from the standpoint of giving the Democrats leverage in the House to deal with the Republicans through the power of the veto, it was devastating.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, the thing that I want to understand is, I for the life of me, I can't understand this. How do you pass a bill when you do not know what is going to happen if you pass this bill? These people have not had one environmental impact study. So
this is for the oil companies, Michael. It's got nothing to do with what's smart, reasonable, or people. It's for the oil companies, and it's intended to help the oil companies make huge amounts of money. It's not about solving a gas problem in our country. It's not about energy needs. It's not about anything but oil company profits. And if you go trace it far enough, I think you'll find that the oil companies and their participants have probably made huge contributions into the Republican coffers, and I think that's what you'd find. I absolutely do. And the absolutely horrendous thing is we had the votes to sustain the veto. All that we had to have is for our members to push the button that they intended to push. And there aren't but two of them there, and you know what it is that you're supposed to push. And at least from my perspective of sitting on the floor of the House, there was nothing rushed about that. We'd been lobbying. I've been lobbying members of my caucus to vote to sustain the governor's veto all day long. We'd already had multiple votes on sustaining vetoes. The Racial Justice Act had already been overridden at that point. The budget had already been overridden at that point, which means that every Democratic member had had practice at which button you needed to push to sustain the governor's veto. And every Democratic member knew that to sustain the governor's veto, you had to push red. To override the governor's veto, you had to push green. It's really pretty simple. There's a guy named Pavlov who did studies with pigeons. He could have pigeons distinguish between a red and a green light.
Yeah. Well, so are you saying that some of these representatives have the brains of, or don't have the brains of pigeons?
All I'm saying is a pigeon can make a distinction between red and green, and that it's not like everybody hadn't already had practice. I mean, we'd been voting veto overrides throughout the evening, and it's not like you vote them one after another after another. But it's also not like somebody sits down and says, oh, my God, I've never been here to vote on a veto override. I've never been put with the choice of which button to mash to sustain a veto against a motion to override it. It's not like it was the first time at the rodeo. And, it's not like we hadn't done it before over the last almost 2 years on other veto override motions that had shown up. It's that we'd had practice that very evening. So, I mean, how much simpler can it be to do for a third time something you've already done twice in the previous short time frame? I mean, like in hours.
Well, now, was this a case where people had gone home, they were in their bed, or they were sleeping, or they were eating, and they were called back?
The schedule was that we took an extended dinner break from, I don't know, 4:30, 5 o'clock, somewhere in there, 5:15 until 9:15. So we'd had like a four-hour break. But all a four-hour break does is give you rest and a chance to leisurely have dinner and relax and come back ready to endure what remains. So it's not like anybody's been beat to death by the process or hadn't had a chance to go take a break or take a nap if they want it, for crying out loud. It was a rather, by end of session standards, it was rather leisurely. We certainly had end of session runs previously where really you're going from fairly early in the day, all day, and even all night up until 3, 4, 5, 6 o'clock in the morning. I've been there to do that before. And this was not that. I mean, yeah, it was late. Yeah, it was a long day, but we'd had breaks that we wouldn't ordinarily get, plenty of time to take a nap if that's what you need, you know, what the evening is bringing, plenty of time to get sustenance if you needed to get out and walk around, plenty of time to do that. By end of session standards, this was relatively leisurely.
Well, the question I have is, this is a part-time legislature. Suppose they had to work.
Yeah.
Suppose they had to work a year round. What would happen then? These people think we have to get new people. These people couldn't take it.
Well, if you had a full-time year-round legislature, I'm sure that the votes would come day to day in a more leisurely fashion. But I don't know that you'd get any more done. I suspect you get just as much done. You'd have to pay people a lot more to do it. Folks get paid about $13,000 a year to go do this. I mean, they get some per diem and some travel, but the base salary is like $13,000. I used to explain to folks that people valued being a dog catcher a lot more than being a legislature, because dog catchers got paid about three times the rate.
Well, absolutely. Because as far as I'm concerned, As far as I'm concerned, there is just no way that I can say that my dollar is being spent wisely up there when I know that a lot of the people up there have other things on their mind. I'm sending the Raleigh to have one thing on their mind. Make sure they take care of me and my community.
Well, I think that's what the people in there go for, Michael. I mean, it's a sacrifice to go be up there for most folks.
That's right. And it shouldn't be.
And the reason they do it, the reason they're willing to make the sacrifice is they care about their community. It's not about themselves. On the whole, the people in that place are bright folks who've been successful in education. They've been successful in business. They've been successful in medicine or dentistry or whatever it is they do. And so you have generally bright folks who have good track records for making good decisions in their own life.
You are so being so nice and so diplomatic. I know idiots up there. Please don't tell me that. There are morons in the daggone assembly. Morons.
I don't know any of those. There are people up there I don't agree with, Michael. And there are people up there whose values, I think, are horrendous. And there are people up there who I think care more about companies than they do about people. But just because somebody's got good sense doesn't mean they're using good sense.
Well, there are people up there who don't know where they're coming out of the rain unless someone tells them to. I know some people.
I don't know any of those.
You might know. Next time I see you, I'll point them out to you.
All right, or you can tell me now. I know a lot of people up there. Most of the folks, even the folks I disagree with, I respect. Not all of them, but most of them.
Right. Well, I tell you right now, we have representatives. One representative in particular from Mecklenburg County who don't belong up there, and he's just not fit to be up there because he does not know the issues at all.
Who are you talking about?
Rodney Moore.
I like Rodney. Rodney's a bright guy, hardworking guy. Right. I don't always agree with Rodney, but I tell you, Rodney works hard at his craft.
Right, at his craft. Well, I don't know what his craft is. He needs to get a new one. But we'll talk about him later. But I want to get Mr. Marshall.
Yes.
How is this fracking going to affect Wake County?
Whatever county it's in, it's going to affect the.
Well, you're from
the
Wake
water.
County. I want to. You're from Wake County. I want you to tell us.
Well, Mike, not having the research. Not having any of the problems that can be created by there. Looking at our water, which is critical for the state to continue to be a viable place and a place that companies are moving to and that kind of thing. I think more study needs to be done before we do anything.
The problem is that this is my reason for asking the question. How does anybody know how this is going to affect them when there's been no EPA study? How is this possible?
Well, there has not been any major studies done by the environmental protection people to actually see exactly what could happen. There's a lot of speculation as to what's happening. But as far as conservation districts throughout the state, I don't think they have gotten any of their needed answers yet. So to present a viable case as to pro or con about the fracking situation in the state, and
well,
I think you maybe want to look at what happened in some of the states that are currently, and being involved in fracking. You know, there are a lot of things, issues on the table that people who are environmental. Health and environmental would like to sit down and really look at seriously what would happen, what can happen. I believe, right. If I'm right, I think Pennsylvania has allowed fracking, and I believe that's one of the states that have allowed it already. So I think as a conservation person, I would hope and I would pray that before we give out the first contract or first lease or whatever the case may be, that some of these, all of these answers can be answered for the people of North Carolina. We had a lot of discussion on offshore oil drilling, and we had months and years of discussion about that. So let's do the same thing with fracking. Let's look at it and see what could happen. We saw what happened in Louisiana when you have offshore oil drilling, and the people in Louisiana may suffer from years and years from that tragedy that they had out there. So let's not hastily do something without actually getting all the data in.
Well, this is all I ask, Bill. Bill, what is the alternative if, in fact, let me ask this question. Are they going to do an EPA study?
Are they going to do what?
Are they going to do an EPA study, an environmental protection study?
Well, there certainly is a government study underway as to the health impacts of fracking. It isn't going to be ready anytime soon. The problem with fracking, in fact, there was a study done by Diener. The Diener study was suggesting that if you could deal with some of the problems of fracking, you could do it safely. But the problem with the Diener study is that what it's postulating as to how you'd have to deal with some of the problems of fracking are not things available now in North Carolina. For example, the way you frack is you take perfectly good drinking water, you intentionally contaminate it, ram it in the ground, bust up the subsurface rock,
right. Suck
the water back out, and then you have to put it in an injection well somewhere else, which means you have all this contaminated water that you have to dispose of. And the structures in North Carolina are such that the water tends to track through tissue planes, and you put at risk the drinking water. And so for that reason, disposing of the water in an injection well is just absolutely unacceptable. And yet that's really the only way they have for doing it right now. Now, the Diener study talked about how fracking could be done safely, but that would only be if you had a way of reclaiming the chemicals out of the water and purifying the water before you released it back into the environment. By the way, an environment where we deal with significant droughts. And so I think that the people who are using the Diener study to say that fracking can be done safely, and that's what Diener concluded, are not correctly reading the Diener study. It doesn't conclude that. What it concludes is that with significant changes, it might could be done. And the problem
is the Diener study.
I'm sorry, what?
How old is that? Is the Diener study?
This spring. It just came out a few months ago. Yeah, it just came out a few months ago. The thing, though, is that that everybody agrees that fracking is not going to be something that is economically, commercially viable in North Carolina for at least a decade. Well, if it's not going to be done here for a decade, then there's no reason to go put in place rules and regulations for fracking when it's not going to be done here. Moreover, we know that in the first year, it would only produce about 50 jobs, one or two less or one or two more. And we know that, in fact, there are only about 200 people in the state who know how to frack to start with. And if it ever got up and running 100%, all of the jobs, not just those directly related to fracking, but all the spinoff jobs, would be, and I'm talking about healthcare jobs and other jobs, would only be about 800, 850 jobs once it's up and running a decade from now. And so to go ahead and try to make the rules today when the systems that you need to do this safely are not in place today, and then to make it so you can go forward and issue fracking permits now, while at the same time we can go look at how things are done in Louisiana and Pennsylvania and Texas and Colorado and Utah, all the places that already have fracking. Also, in the Dakotas, they have some. And so you can go look at these, and you can see the pattern that exists. And the pattern is that the oil and gas companies end up overrunning individual rights, and you have the private interest of the oil and gas companies essentially condemning the private interest of individuals, paying them some money, but who knows whether it's anything that's fair or reasonable for what's being taken from them, taken without their permission, and moving forward. So we know the patterns of the oil and gas companies. We can go look at other states, and it's a bad, bad pattern. And for the damage they do to the environment, for the damage they do to individual property rights, are all reasons not to pass fracking. And it's another reason why it was so very important that as Democrats protecting individual rights to have fresh drinking water, to have a safe environment, and to protect individual property rights, it was so important that we sustain the governor's veto. And it is an awful thing that it did not happen, made all the worse by the fact that a member, having practiced throughout the evening on voting on motions to override vetoes and voting correctly, comes up on this critical vote where the vote made such a difference in voting incorrectly. It's worse than I can tell you. It's just really awful. And it's awful not just because it lets them go forward with the scheme they have, but it's also awful because of the demoralizing impact it has on the environmental community and on so many of the Democratic leadership that had been working so very hard on this issue, that had lobbied so hard, that knew we had problems with some members. And as Becky says, I mean, she had been lobbying members to vote to sustain the governor's veto all day long. It's just so very disappointing to have had a member to push the wrong button after the evening's practice, and given how simple an issue that it was and how really straightforward on the floor. There was no confusion. There was nothing strange going on. There was no rush happening. It was the very last veto vote taking place because the Republicans knew they were a vote shy. And so they were giving their members a shot at it. They thought they'd give it a pull and see. And we had it. We had it. And it is so it is just such a tragedy that that happened. But
we have another person joining us right now. Hello, who's this?
Walter Rogers.
Walter Rogers. How are you, Mr. Rogers? We have Representative Bill Faison and Soil and Water Commissioner Mr. Marshall Harvey on the line.
Hello, gentlemen.
Hey, how you doing, Walter?
I hope both of you all are doing fine, and I was listening to your conversation.
I certainly
hope that since is it possible that the bill may come back again for a reconsideration vote? Is that possible?
No. There's something called a cloture motion, which is a way to put it in a position where you'd have to have essentially a two-thirds vote to bring it back to the floor.
Mm-hmm.
And that cloture motion was made by Stam. It was a motion for reconsideration is the first step in it. Second step is then to move to lay that motion on the table, and then it takes the two-thirds vote to get it off the table. And so Stam made the motion for reconsideration. Before that motion was argued or heard, he made a motion of higher precedence, which was the motion to table his own motion. That motion was voted, and the motion to reconsider was then laid on the table, meaning you'd have to have a two-thirds vote to bring it off the table and then to try to get it passed from there. Well, the veto override vote should have fallen short by one vote. The Republicans would have had 71 votes, not 72, and which means they had a majority to a very strong majority.
Was that Becky Carney's vote?
Yes. Unfortunately, Becky's wonderful. I love her. She's a great legislator. She's a great representative of the county. She was a great county commissioner. She has done and continues to do great things for Mecklenburg County.
She is a primary example of why there needs to be a limit as to just how late the legislature may function at night.
Well, there is. There's a 9 o'clock limit. At 9 p.m., there is a limit. The legislature, by its rules, is supposed to stop at 9 p.m. Now, what happens at 9 p.m. is they stop the clock in the room. They turn off the electricity to the clock at 9 p.m. That's how they get past 9 p.m. They used to have votes to go past 9 p.m. A majority would do it. The Republicans have a majority. If they wanted to go past 9 p.m. anytime they wanted to, they could. But what they do is they just stop the daggum clock so it never gets later than 9 p.m. on the floor.
You know, that's ugly. That's ugly.
I agree.
That's ugly.
I agree. And then, Walter, the other thing is that by Constitution, you cannot continue a session into the next day. So by the Constitution, you have to recess by midnight. But what they do is they recess at midnight, and then the next day, which is 5 minutes after midnight, they reconvene. Now, that has happened on more than one occasion. I agree with you. It ought not to be possible. But I'd put that right along with the rule that allows folks to interrupt a speaker who's speaking to ask them a question. It's impolite generally in social conversation to interrupt somebody in the middle of what they have to say. It's permitted under the rules. It's a way of trying to distract the speaker from being able to finish their remarks. It is an unseemly way to do business, but it's the way things are done there.
100 years of anxiety sure brings about an interesting person, doesn't it?
Well, I think that would always be true, my brother.
The other thing is the liability. The liability issue. It bothers me. Remember all the super funds we had way back because of the contamination of, you know, of everything. And that issue with fracking, I'm just concerned. We know, you know, it's going to mess up the water table. It's going to contaminate everything. And I don't want the state and federal government, if somebody screws it up, I want to make sure that there's enough liability that they can pay for it.
Well, without an EPA study, you can't have that because nobody knows.
Well, gentlemen, I appreciate y'all allowing me to have my say on that. We want to talk about the vote today.
Yes. Well, tell us, Walter, about this vote.
Well, today,
Walter. Before you start, Michael, I had blocked out about 45 minutes for us today.
Okay.
I'm going to have to bail. I just wanted to tell you guys goodbye, and thank you for letting me participate in the discussion.
But there's one thing I got to ask you before you go.
Okay.
Why are you going?
Today?
Why are you leaving the legislature?
Oh, they only let you run for one job at a time, and and as you know, I ran for governor, and I would like to have been in that race, but the party selected somebody else as their standard bearer. And since you can only run for one job at a time, I could not both run for governor and run for my House seat. And
but that doesn't limit
my choice.
You from coming back.
All right.
That does not limit you from coming back.
No, it doesn't limit me from running for governor again either.
That's right. Absolutely. So if you forget, I'm going to be on you once a week to remind you of that.
You stay after me, Michael. I enjoyed talking with you, buddy. Guys, I enjoyed being a part of the show.
Okay.
Take care.
You guys take care. Bye.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
All right.
Walter, tell
yes.
us about the event tonight.
Michael, at 6:30 today, the 8th Congressional District Black Leadership Caucus will congregate at the Hamlet NAACP building. As a result of the comments made by Congressman Larry Kissel on Tuesday, I think the world has heard or seen his comments by now. I got several calls from New York this morning, newspapers in New York State. But we are going to have a call, and we're asking all the media to come. We are going, the chairman of the 8th District Black Leadership Caucus PAC, Mr. B.E. Bazemore, will read a statement that has been prepared in conjunction with the call meeting that we had on Tuesday night. where we had 9 of the 10 counties in the 8th district represented,
right.
And they set out some special guidelines for Mr. Bazemore, and we're going to have him read exactly what has been determined after we've passed it out to the media present.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Well, the I just received a email talking about this, and it says that I don't know who, I can't see who it came from now, but it says on Monday, July 2nd, the North Carolina 8th District Black Leadership Caucus and its PAC agreed to withdraw all support from Congressman Larry Kissel.
Well, I'm not.
In the newspaper in the Charlotte Observer today.
I'm not surprised.
The Black Leadership Caucus not happy with Kissel.
There's a lot of people not happy with Kissel. And,
well,
you know, like, it's real interesting because, and the thing is, the votes that he makes does not just affect the 8th district. It affects the
correct.
Entire country.
Absolutely correct. Absolutely
and there
correct.
Are a lot of people that are embarrassed that the 8th district Black Leadership Caucus has gone this long.
Well, and here's the thing. What they're going to say is, oh, he voted for the president 97% of the time. Well, when you're voting for what to call a post office or a name
mm-hmm.
of a road, to me, that is not a vote.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you vote against your standard bearer, the president
mm-hmm.
of the United States,
mm-hmm.
on four of his major platform issues,
mm-hmm.
that's when I have a problem.
Well, the trivia vote is not what we have problems with. We have problems with the ones like health care, the attorney general, the credit card bill, and the real stuff that affect low-wealth people.
The health care bill.
Yeah. You know, while he as a congressman makes, what, $175,000 a year and has one of the best health care available,
okay.
He doesn't want
lifetime.
You to have it.
Well, that's absolutely true. So I want to know, what is he going to say to the people in Briscoe if the repeal goes through, which is not going to go through? But if it goes through, what would he say to the people in Briscoe, which are not the wealthiest people in this state?
Well, the entire 8th congressional district. Mike, the man has some of the highest unemployment rate counties in the state. And the people, he has some of the poorest people in the state, in his congressional district.
That's correct.
You know, he's been there. He hasn't done anything about that aspect of his, you know. I don't think he have a legitimate explanation. You know, what he needs to do is, If he wants to vote with the Republican Party, he needs to run as a Republican candidate.
Absolutely correct.
Well, he acts like a Republican.
Yes, he does, Marsh. He sure does.
All the behavior, Walter, as a Republican.
Mm-hmm. And the other thing that was brought up by someone in the party was that we need to make sure that we vote for Larry Kissel, even though he has these problems, is because we need to have the committee chairmanships. Well, that doesn't wash because if it doesn't wash because if you don't win the entire Congress majority, if you don't win the majority of the Congress, you don't have a chance to be a chairman of any leadership position. So therefore, it doesn't count anyway. So we need to win 25. Without Larry Kissel, we need to meet 26.
But I
urge all the DCCC to send that $1.1 million to another elected official that is on the cusp.
I think what should happen, the entire 8th district needs to have a sit-down with Larry Kissel. and lay out
we
some
We did
things.
That already. Did that last year.
Well, no,
we did
no,
that in the last round.
Mike, he may not have heard you.
He heard it loud and clear because two years ago, you know, the New York Times came. They did a week follow and interview of people all across the congressional district. And he knew then that he was walking on slippery ice. He knew then, and everybody made it very clear. You know, even myself, I say, the congressman, I'm going to vote for him. I'm going to vote for him one more time, give him one more chance. And he come back, he's worse this time than he was the time before. But see, you can't continue to allow somebody to disrespect you, take you for granted, and you come back and vote for them over and over and over.
Well, you sound like 99% of the Democratic Party does that to African American anyway. They just take us for granted, period. But
the more you vote your for granted vote, the more they will take you for granted.
Right. But what I'm saying is that this time, if you guys meet with him this time.
We've already talked. We've had other congressmen to talk with him. He has just decided this is what I'm going to do. If you want to vote for me, you vote for me, and if you don't, I'm taking vote for granted anyway. And I think we're past the talking stage with Larry Kissel.
Well, Larry Kissel said in the paper Tuesday, July 3rd edition of the Charlotte Observer, I don't care what the elected officials say about how I vote. Paraphrasing him. If I can find it in here, but that's what he said. So he didn't care.
What's that old rule? Hard head make us what kind of behind?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Very bad. Mm-hmm. Very bad.
Well, very true.
As they say on Battlestar Galactica, a fracking sore behind.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But it's unfortunate. He's had an opportunity to make a big difference, and I hate that it's come to this, but at some point you have to cut your ties and try to do something different.
Well, this is what he said about the Attorney General. He says I'm not concerned about opinions of party leadership, and that my vote to find Holden in contempt was about the need for transparency.
Well, from what there has been a lot of misconception of exactly what it transpired.
No,
there weren't early. There weren't.
Let's not beat around the bush.
Yeah.
It was pure lies.
Yeah. So he actually voted based on misconception.
He's using the word misconception as a lie. It was the New York Times came out with a report by. Their reporter, Catherine Eben, who said that this is all a bunch of malarkey, that it never happened this way. And Darrell Issa, the chairman of the committee who's running it, knows that it's not true. And the chairman he's the ranking Democrat on ISIS committee also said, we all know it's true. They talked about it. This is just about to add more, to throw more stuff against the wall for this black president. That's all it's about. If this was, and we need to be frank here.
Mm-hmm.
This is about a black president and a black attorney general. If these two people were not black, this would not be heard.
I wonder why they will.
We wouldn't have a Tea Party. We wouldn't have any of this nonsense,
Michael.
So you know, it's please,
Michael.
Yep.
I wonder why the president doesn't get any credit for having a white mother.
She made a mistake, probably.
But it is what it is,
Walter. That's an interesting question. Well, mm-hmm. yeah, that you barely ever heard a comment about his
mm-hmm.
mother.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know.
Yeah. Yeah.
But this in my history in this country, this is the only president I know that has been totally disrespected by.
Yes, he has.
And before we continue, well, we just need to hear this just for a minute.
Man, woman,
hey.
Yes.
I hate his music.
And we want to welcome our healthcare expert and chair of Cabarrus County Democratic Party, the chair of the Cabarrus County Democratic Party, Mrs. Grace Lee Galloway.
Hi, Michael.
Well, Grace, say hello to Walter Rogers and Marshall Harvey.
Hello, Grace.
Hello, Grace.
Recognize your voices.
All right.
Hi. Yeah.
How you doing?
Okay, so, aside from the fact that I'm spitting mad, you mean aside from that about Larry?
what do you think? Well, Grace. What do you think about what we were saying?
Well, I think we ought to write in our candidate of choice. Now, I'm not going to vote for a Republican. Never have, never will. But I
How
think
about
we
it?
Ought to, well, I, you know, I, what I said to everyone is I'm writing in Bill Hefner's name. I know he's dead, but at least he's a Democrat. And I'd rather vote for a dead Democrat than a live Dino.
Mm-hmm.
So... But you know, y'all can write in whomever you want. There are two great candidates out there. Chris Green is a great candidate. Chad Flynn is a great candidate. Those two are strong, solid
Well,
Democrats.
Nancy Shacker did a great job, too.
And Nancy Shacker. This is what I'm saying. We've got three great candidates. We can write in all their names. And I think we ought to have a write-in campaign.
I agree with you.
Well, how many people do you need to have a writing campaign?
You don't need any. You don't need to even worry about them. You just have to write them in.
Write their name in. That's all.
Just write their name in.
So everybody, ask everybody, take a pencil to the poll with you. Take a pencil to the poll with you. And it might be if we're able to do a coordinated thing, we might be able to get us some of those little 2 or 3 inch pencils that has the write-in candidate name on them.
Well, yeah,
there
but when you do it electronically, how do you put the person's name in? How is that
Wait.
Done?
We're not doing it electronically. We're still doing it paper.
No, we do it electronically here, Mecklenburg.
Yeah, well, you Mecklenburg is the great secret of Mecklenburg. I don't know, but you'll have to find out.
Mike, it can be done electronically. There's still a space down there for write-in. You cannot have an election and not have the opportunity to write a person's
right.
name.
Well,
there
is a
process.
I figured that there must be a process, but I was trying to figure out how is it done electronically.
Well, the other piece is, Mike, for people... In order, any legal document, which the ballot is a legal document, Walter, it should be in ink, not pencil. So you
ink,
get a
not
lot
pencil.
Of pen. Ink, not pencil, right.
Okay.
And what you would want to do if you're going to get his get the candidate's name on those things, the goodness, you know.
It has to be the correct spelling.
Correct spelling also, yes.
Right. Mm-hmm. It has to be on uniform. Everyone has to spell the same way.
Right, right.
So
yes.
Whichever candidate we decide on, that's whom we should promote and make sure that everyone knows that's the candidate we want to win. What do you think, Walter? Marshall?
You know, I've thought about it some. I think the one that will probably get the greatest figure may possibly be Bill Hefner.
Yes.
But even at that, Nancy Shacker did a great job in running against Larry Kissel and Chris Curry prior to that.
Mm-hmm.
So both Nancy and Chris would be great people, and you never can tell. The sky might fall.
Hey, let's work on it, Walter. Walter,
hey,
we'll talk about this off air.
Yeah, I think you all should work on that. That's a good idea.
Uh-huh.
To have a write-in candidate.
Walter, I will get your phone number from Michael. Michael, you get Walter my phone number. We'll do a little conniving off the air.
Oh, okay.
Well, hey, I don't see anything wrong with that. As a matter of fact, and besides that, dead men tell no tales.
Okay.
As the saying goes.
Now, Michael, if you don't have anything else for me, I'm going to run and finish getting my stuff together for the 6 o'clock meeting.
Well, I sent you an email with some
corrections. And I sent you one also.
Okay, well, I can't read it now, but did you get my email?
Just call me later. I saw it, but I didn't open it.
Oh, okay.
Yet.
You open it.
I'll go back and open it.
Okay.
Okay.
All right, Walter.
Thank you. Hey, you all, I think it's always great talking to you all. Have a great afternoon.
You too, Walter.
And matter of fact, Walter, tell Nancy she was supposed to call in. I didn't hear from her. She called me on the cell, but how am I supposed to talk? I don't have 2 miles.
Well, I'll call and remind her because she just tried to get to me.
Okay. Gotcha.
Okay.
Bye.
See you all.
Bye.
Bye.
Yes. So, Grace?
Yes?
What is the story? What can we do about, I don't know how much of the show you've been listening to, but, and I wanted to ask, I think Marshall asked the question about how do we go back on this fracking business? How do we come back to it and get it overridden or changed or whatever? But here's the thing, the question I have, how do you both even present a bill to be passed when you don't know the ramifications? This is the same thing they did with the deep water drill out there in the Gulf of Mexico. They dumped the daggone drill, but they didn't know how to cap it if an accident occurred. How are we, Marshall, going to go back and vote? How are we going to go and vote for something when we don't know the ramifications?
Michael, the only way is to repeal the bill in the next session. But in order to do that, the fracking bill, we have to have control of the House. We have to have control of the General Assembly.
Yeah.
Okay, we don't have control of the General Assembly, so that's the bottom line. We have to take that. And that's really where our work should be, is taking back the General Assembly in Raleigh. I mean, I've given up on Larry Kissel. You know, I gave up on him. I threw my hands up in the air. I said, that's it, I'm done. I tried to give him another chance, but he didn't. He just doesn't listen. He doesn't care.
No, he doesn't. And you see, now, is this something that happened to him while he was there, or was he? Do we think now he was always this way?
I don't know. I mean, you know, Robin Hayes said that he went to Washington to change Washington, and Washington ended up changing him. And I feel it this same way with Larry. I would love to say that he went with all good intentions to change Washington, and then Washington changed him, but I don't know. I don't know, because right out of the gate, he voted against the most important bill.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know?
Yeah. And I really helped Larry get elected. I helped him win his first run. I helped him in the second run because he just seem so honest and sincere. And yes, you know, this is not a democratic. We don't have a democracy. We have a representative republic where we have people who represent us, and people need to understand that they can't vote for every single issue that you want. The art of the deal is in place. People need to know that when you have your representative up there, they have to make deals, compromises. And sometimes the compromise might come and slap somebody in the face that shouldn't be slapped. But in order to get something else done, you might have to do that. And this is understandable. But not on the signature issues of the standard bearer, who represents the party.
Well, plus to say he won't endorse Obama, which means what? It means he doesn't want to vote for Obama either, right?
Uh-huh.
But just a little FYI about this whole the person who said that we need to continue to vote for Larry Kissel because we need control of the House in order to have control of the committee.
Right.
That's David Parker, right? Wasn't that David Parker?
Yes, it was.
Yeah, that figure? Sure, it's bigger. Because he's the same way. Don't get rid of the dead wood. You know, don't get rid of the dead wood. Hold on to the dead wood. Keep holding on to the dead wood. Which is the dead wood person saying, hold on to the dead wood. Hell. But that's been his stand all along. I've had humorous conversations with Parker. Where when Kissel originally voted against the health care reform, and we were all really, really angry with him, Parker said, just swallow it, hold your nose, and vote for Kissel because we need control of the committee. Well, guess what? We lost the damn House. We don't have control over the committee. So you made a very good point. The only way that we can have control is if we win the majority of the House of Representatives, and it doesn't look like we're going to do that because the DCCC is throwing their money behind candidates like Kissel. They just throw their money behind candidates like Patrick Murphy, who's running against Alan West down in Florida, and Alan Grayson.
Right.
Okay, that's who they need to be throwing their money behind.
I just don't understand it. I don't understand. You know, they did this, the DCCC did this once before. They brought this guy up, and I don't remember who he was, some colonel, Marine colonel or something, and they told us, oh, he's the perfect person we need to run against Robin Hayes. And this guy was a fascist, practically.
It was done.
He said, no, that's when we got Larry Kissel.
That was Tim Dunn,
That's right. And we got Larry Kissel. Nobody wanted him. The DCCC didn't back him, but Larry beat him.
Right.
Because he had the people behind him.
Right.
We can't do this again and suffer the consequences.
Yep.
But you know what? We have 2 years that we are now going to suffer through a Republican, and I mean if Larry Kissel's in there, same thing as a Republican, or a regular Republican.
It's the same. Except I think it's the fourth because he's a Republican and Democrat clothing. And I feel that to me that's hypocritical. And I really hate politics. I already hate politicians. But I truly, truly despise politicians that are hypocrites.
I had a young lady call me up today who said she is so disillusioned with the same thing you just said, with politics, that she ran ragged in Mecklenburg County for Larry Kissel, putting out signs, making phone calls, and he didn't support the stimulus, and he now didn't support health care, and he didn't support the other thing he didn't support, health care, stimulus, it was two other things. She said, but she was upset about the stimulus and the health care. And she said that, well, she has a child who is, well, he's not a child. He's 23, 24 years old. And she was so happy about having him on the health care plan because he does not, he works part-time, does not have enough money, doesn't get paid for health care. She now can put him on his, on her health care plan. And she was just thankful for that. But now, if he's thrown off, said he can't afford it. Can't afford it at all. And he has to get a separate one, which is going to be a lot more than what she's paying right now. And I can tell you something right now. I have a daughter. I am paying for, a matter of fact, they just told me it's going to go up to $406 a month. $406. And she's a healthy woman. So I'm now shopping around to get some cheaper insurance because there are going to be cheaper insurance because of the health care plan that was passed.
It's well, I talked yesterday to the Independent Trib because they, you know, they saw my comments on Facebook. Now, Walter, there's going to be a press conference today. Where is it going to be, Mike?
The press conference will be 202 Hamlet Avenue in Hamlet, North Carolina, in front of the NAACP building, right out in front.
All right.
That's
202. I don't know if we can get there, but I do know some reporters had asked me. So if you could text that to me, I will forward it to them.
Yes, okay. And that's, again, for those that are listening, it's 202, the press conference for the 8th District Black Leadership Caucus and PAC will be in front of the NAACP building in Hamlet, South Carolina. That's 202.
Hamlet, North Carolina,
Hamlet,
Mike.
I'm sorry, Hamlet, North Carolina. Thank you. Hamlet, North Carolina, 202 Hamlet Avenue, Hamlet, North Carolina. In front of the NAACP building, that will be at 6:30 this evening.
Yeah. All right. Well, you know, we've got our work cut out for us. I think the first thing we have to do is dump people. And then whoever gets, I know we're going to get, you know, either Keel, who's an absolute moron, or Hudson, who is half of a moron. those are the two Republicans running. But we took the seat back from Robert Hayes, and heck, we could do it again and put in a real Democrat. We can do this again. I mean, I don't care how the damn districts are drawn. We can do it again.
I thought we ran someone in this district that was going to be attentive to the needs of the district. The needs of the district is to have health care. The needs of the district is to have some jobs.
According to Larry, what he's saying is that he's heard the majority of people that he's heard from do not want health care. That's what he's saying. Okay.
Well, where is he getting this information from? Where is he getting this from?
Well, he said people call in. People call in and tell him that. So, I don't know. Because I know that many of us lobbied for health care, but evidently our voices didn't count. I don't know.
Well, listen,
I'm only repeating to you what his office says to me. And what his office has said, when you ask his office about why in the world he's voting to repeal it, his office says that all Larry is doing is following up on the same promise and the same vote that he had in the first place. Well, that's speaking out of both sides of his mouth because he originally voted against the passage of the Affordable Care Act, and then he said, but he will not vote to repeal it. And when the vote came up within, you know, a week after in 2009, he voted against repealing. So which one are you, which promise are you keeping, Larry Kissel? I don't know. You got, you know, which daggum promise are you keeping?
Mm-hmm.
mind.
Well, hey, listen, you know, Galileo once said, all truths are easy to understand once they are discovered. The point is to discover them.
I'm gonna have to leave you. I will talk with you later in the day and find out exactly what happened. And it was good talking with you. Yes.
Marsh, we'll talk to you later, Marsh.
All right. We will talk
later. I hope I'm having a little cocktail at the time when I speak to you.
All right. That sounds good, Mike. Okay, I'll talk to you later.
In Charleston, South Carolina.
All right. Talk to you later,
okay.
Marshall.
So, let's see who we have on here right now. Hello, who's this? Hello?
Can you hold on, please?
Yes.
Hi, Michael?
Yes.
How
are you,
Nancy? Shacker.
I have great call.
All right. I think I can find it now.
Nancy, you're going to write your name in.
Write your name in, Nancy?
Thank you very much. I've got to take this other call. Thank you. I'm sorry. How are you guys doing?
Well, Grace said that she was thinking about writing your name in.
Well, that's interesting. I was just on the line with because a few people have called me, and I'm getting the information now about the instructions for filing petitions, because you can't just go in there and write a name in. Okay.
That was the question I asked before.
If you're going to have a write-in candidate, you need to have 250 signatures for a congressional election. And then I was looking at the petitions. You'd think you should be able to, but it doesn't quite work that way. So anyway, how are you guys doing, Grace? How have you been?
Well,
I've been fine, Nancy, but when's the deadline for the petition, we need, I think
I don't have that information
something.
Yet. I'll find out and I'll have it.
You need to send that out ASAP, Nancy.
But I can't do 3-4 things at one time. I can't have a conversation with you and get that. But I am looking at the information now.
Anyway,
as you can see, we have some upset in the 8th Congressional District. And I'm happy that the North Carolina Black Leadership Caucus has taken the initiative to say no more. No mas. No mas. For those of you who may remember the boxer that said, I'm not going to take anymore. We just have never, I heard Mike, I think you were talking about compromise. Which politics is the art of compromise.
Right.
But I like us to differentiate between appeasement and compromise.
Oh, yes.
Because appeasement means that, well, you want to bring things to some kind of state of quiet or calm, or it means that you yield or concede to some kind of demand.
Right.
And that is a problem because sometimes you do that at the expense of justice or some other principles that you might have. Compromise means a settlement by people who, or those who make mutual concessions. I'm not sure in this instance that there's a mutual concession.
Oh, no, absolutely, there isn't any.
Right, so that's
correct.
We talked about it on our radio show this morning, and it was interesting because my co-host today was not my regular co-host. And you had a chance to meet him, Grace. My co-host was Troy Williams, who is an African-American man from Fayetteville, who is a Republican. He's a black Republican. So he had an interesting view, and it was quite an exciting program this morning.
I'd love to have a talk with him.
You can. He took the lead on our Driving While Black issue, and he has been the one who has stayed on it. And as you know, maybe your listeners don't know, but as a result, we have a new business manager, someone who came out of Durham, and that person will appoint the new police of chief. We lost a chief of the police department. We, because of this continuous pressure here in Fayetteville, chief resigned, retired, and also the business manager left. So we have those two new spots coming in, and we've been working hard to make sure that we have a civilian review board, which for some reason got pulled out of the water. But my point is that Troy has worked very, very hard on the lead with that, with the information, the data, the numbers. He's taken a great role. And he was a Republican for Obama. He organized Republicans for Obama. So just
oh, you mean, so he's
that
just
in
like,
mind.
He's just like, he was just like Larry Kissel then.
That means on our side. Who's Larry Kissel endorsing, Romney?
Beats the heck out of me. It beats the heck out of me. Maybe he's writing in somebody.
Okay, all right.
He's going to write in somebody.
That
Abraham
could
Lincoln.
Happen.
Abraham Lincoln.
Well,
listen,
you
Nancy,
know,
I
reminded him, because he says what Democrats won't do. That they're going to turn right around and vote in the Democrat again.
Yeah, well,
and he's pretty adamant about that. And I disagree. I think that people can change. I think that if you understand some of the power you have as a voting bloc, that you don't have to settle. Now, we may have some individuals who will, you know, boogity-boog over to the other side, to the dark side, as I call it, and, you know, for their own personal interests. But by and large, this has set you in the front and set you a slap in the face, particularly for the African-American community, that I think it would be hard for folks to rationalize and justify doing anything.
Well, I want you to give us, we got another minute here, I want you to give us the time of your shows on the air.
I'm on Mondays and Thursdays from 9 until 10. And that's on three stations out this way. I'm on WIDU 1600. I'm on 1430 in Scotland County, Wewo. And I'm on Wagram 1640 in Lumberton, New Jersey. Lumberton, North Carolina.
Jersey. Thank you.
Yeah, no, Jersey.
Okay.
And so it covers a number of counties in the southeast. That one radio station covers, I don't know, Bladen. You can get it up to Lee County, of course, Cumberland, Polk, through much of the 8th District and the 7th District.
Well, I want to thank all the guests today, and I want everybody to remember the single biggest problem with communication is the illusion that it has taken place. I want to thank you, Nancy. I want to thank you, Grace. I want to thank Bill Faison.
Thanks for inviting me. I appreciate it. Who else is on the line?
Grace.
You missed
we're going to say goodbye.
You Rogers and Marshall.
And
oh,
Helen,
okay.
Arthur Harvey. I want to thank him, too. And everybody have a happy, happy weekend. I'm going to be having some pilates and some margaritas down in Charleston this weekend.
Okay, great. Well, enjoy your weekend, Michael. Thank you
and
for letting me come on and speak a little bit to some of our issues that we're facing.
And I also have to say happy anniversary to my wife. Saturday is our 33rd.
Wow.
Happy anniversary. She ain't here, yes. So, you know.
That's okay. Wonderful. Congratulations. She's a wonderful woman. She has to be.
I got to cut you people off. Give me a break.
Bye,
here.
Michael.
Okay.
Bye.
How's Mary by treating you? Good? She's gone. Bye.
Bye. I'll see you. Everybody have a great weekend. Bye.